First time I saw this book, I remember leafing through it and just having to put it back down again. I had to find the right place to really kind of roll back the curtain on this in a very slow way. I'll try and do that for you on the air, too, because it's just, if Tracy Twyman's research, if the work that's done by her and Nick Redfern and Commander X and the other contributors to this story, if it's correct, then it really is that work would be satanic. Then the CIA really would have done some of the most evil work that's ever been conceived, intentionally breaking children mentally into pieces so that they could be manipulated and used for both personal sexual gratification and also for to be used as a kind of tool for their goals internationally, politically, and you know, with in their clandestine espionage role with the government. It's astounding to think that it's true, and I'm hoping that it's not. But we'll let Tracy Twyman tell you the whole story next, and then you decide on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Well, you know, Tracy Twyman, I know your ears were burning when I was talking about your Money as Magic book, your book on the occult symbols that appear on money. So we'll start there, because apparently I caught you, like, moving or something. You were when we were trying to track you down, we couldn't find you there for a week or so. Where'd you run off to?
Oh yeah, I was moving across the country, and I wasn't aware that you were trying to get hold of me. Sorry.
It's all right. I wish I had a better network than just the phone. That's all I had to go by, because I thought it was so interesting that here, right around the time of the collapse on Wall Street, we were getting there was all this discussion about issuing this many billions, or you know, all the digital money that was out there, and it just seemed like it wasn't real. And there's something about, you know, the symbols on money, and it just makes it more real. And when it's just digits on a computer screen, it doesn't really seem like money somehow. And I kept coming back to your book on that, and I thought it was really good work.
Yeah, when the collapse happened, I remember being on your show before, and a lot of callers were calling up and saying, well, because fiat currency and paper money is all based on, people's trust in the system. It's basically based on people's feelings, and, it's not backed by gold. Doesn't that mean it's vulnerable to collapse, sudden collapse? And I said, yes, that's true, but, I don't foresee that in the future. And as long as people keep having confidence in the American government and the currency that we issue, everything should be fine. And, lo and behold, a couple years later, everything that everyone was afraid of, I think, is actually happening. I mean, right now we can still use our currency. It's still functioning. But I am afraid that, your pessimistic listeners were probably correct. I think that the bailout is going to create massive devaluing of the currency. And I really am afraid that, this may be the end of the dollar that I loved and praised so much in that book. It really looks like they're talking about some sort of international currency now, which I'm not too thrilled about at all. I think that makes things worse. You know, it's like they're going to build an international currency based on the same principles, and that could just precipitate a larger collapse on a more, even more global level. It'll be even more instantaneous. And, I was so optimistic about the future last time I was on the show. I'm, like everyone else, I'm pretty pessimistic now. I'm kind of afraid, that we can't have as much confidence in our leaders as I would have liked. The unfortunate thing is it just seems like that no one in a position of power, at least none of the public figures in government, seem to understand anything about economics. Really. And, I'm no expert either, but it just seems like I understood more than definitely Obama and McCain, who both gladly voted for the bailout without understanding what they were voting on at all. And
let's see whether or not that turns out to be true.
Right.
In the meantime, I have to say, after in what I was reading about in the new book, that's what rocked my world about the government, to think that the government could have ever have been responsible for this. Now, talk about your co-authors first and how this book was put together before we get into it.
Well, actually, I had a lot of this research was done a few years ago. I did an article for Hustler magazine about this subject, Project Monarch. And then a few years later, well, this last year, I decided to put out a book that's a compilation of those interviews and then some essays that I wrote. And originally, I had published it as an ebook, and that ebook is still available on our website, quintessentialpublications.com. But then this Timothy Green Beckley, who you're having on the program, one of your hosts is going to have on the program on Wednesday, he contacted me and he said that he wanted to publish it as a physical book. And he's the one that brought in the other authors and had them contribute some stuff to the book. So actually, I've never met those other authors, and I wasn't involved in the compiling of their material with mine.
Okay.
So that's how it came together.
And I don't know what Tim Beckley's going to be talking about later on.
He's going to be talking about UFOs.
Okay. First of all, what was that like, having an article published in Hustler? Not the kind of thing you can send mom, is it?
I did send it to my mother, but the funny thing is that there's a number of famous people that are accused of being complicit in Project Monarch and abusing women and children, and one of the people that's been accused is Larry Flint of Hustler. So I thought it was amazing that they actually wanted me to publish this article for them and that they were actually willing to do it. And they did, but they edited it in some ways that were different than, what I would have liked, kind of making fun of all the people that were making these accusations. And so one of my goals in publishing the book was to just put it out there the way I wanted it out there instead of just totally poo-pooing the subject. I wanted a more balanced view. So, it was kind of weird that I ended up publishing it in Hustler, but I think it was actually a pretty good venue for it.
So you've never met Commander X, then?
I have not. He has a very mysterious name, though.
Yeah, he does, because you're listed as co-authors of this, although your name appears in the bold type, so
right.
I guess that's a good sign. Let's talk about mind-controlled sex slaves and the CIA, which is available in paperback. You can link up to it through coasttocoastam.com. Now, you talk about a subject which had been written about a little bit before. How did you start following it? How did you get into it?
Gosh, I don't really remember the first time I came across the subject. I'm sure that the first thing I read about was Kathy O'Brien's claims about having been a mind-controlled sex slave herself. And then I just started, doing some internet research, and I found that there were tons of people who claimed that they had been victims of this or that they knew someone who had. And then I was asked to write the article for Hustler, and so then I ended up delving into it a lot deeper and interviewing a lot of these people.
How many people did you end up talking to directly who say this was their experience?
Let's see. Okay. Kathy O'Brien I interviewed on the phone, and her husband. They both had personal experience of it, or so they said. Noreen Gosh her son, she thinks, was kidnapped and victimized by Project Monarch. Those are the people that claim to have been victims that I talked to on the phone. And then I exchanged emails with lots of people. And, at that it seemed like there were actually a lot of people that wanted to come forward and tell me their stories. There was just... some of them were credible and some of them weren't.
This is really important.
I've probably talked to, 50 or 100 people who claim they've been victims of it. Most of them sounded kind of delusional, though.
Well, this is really important. I'm just kind of curious about that because I think some people would want to know, or at least I'm curious, what your criteria was for when somebody sounded delusional or credible on this issue.
Okay. It's very hard because if you had been, as they claim, raped repeatedly and tortured and submitted to satanic rituals as a child and mind control, then you're going to be pretty messed up at the end of that. So I guess it's a given that anyone who's been through this is going to be a little bit crazy. But I guess it's just like some people, you can't really do anything with their stories. You know, it just can't be believed when they bring in aspects of space aliens or people shape-shifting or people flying. you know, then you got to think, okay, this person really can't distinguish between reality and fantasy. But what I found credible, I guess, is when there weren't so many fantastic aspects to it. Like Kathy O'Brien says she had sex with a bunch of different presidents of the United States. And then there are a couple of other women. Bryce Taylor is one of them. Who claim that they have been presidential models, that they were specifically made mind-controlled sex slaves that were going to service people on a presidential level. And, you know, their stories just seem kind of over the top to me, like that they would literally have been victimized by every single living president, you know. It's like I don't know that they're lying, but I just found it hard to believe. Whereas when people had stories of just being victimized by non-famous people that they believed were connected to intelligence, those stories were a little more believable. It's just when the people want to bring in every single, you know, famous person or president into this story, it gets a little bit beyond belief at that point. But go ahead.
No, and this is part of what I was trying to determine, too, because I have seen some of those types of emails myself that somebody has sent, and they've talked about having been essentially quartered at the White House in a secret location, and that I remember one person wrote, and very sincerely, about how they were often trotted out for visiting dignitaries and that this was their life for a period of time. And then there's usually an element to this where they end up escaping and stuff. How did the people that you spoke with, how did they get out of being mind controlled by the CIA? And then we'll go back and talk a little bit more in the next half hour from the beginning about Project Monarch.
Kathy O'Brien says that she was rescued by her now husband, Mark Phillips, that he was he became aware that she was being used as a sex slave when he was working for a CIA contractor. And then he basically took her and her daughter that were both being held as sex slaves and kind of took them on a road trip. And then he had some connections in the CIA himself, and those people told him how to deprogram her. And so that's how she says that she escaped. And then, you know, other people, I guess, have stories that sort of end in childhood, and you don't really know how they escaped. And then I'd also talked to tons of people that hadn't really escaped. Like, they thought that they were still being mind-controlled. They thought that, you know, people were beaming messages into their heads. And
right.
They thought everyone that they knew was involved. You know, and I guess that really is, like, the definition of paranoid schizophrenia, when you think that everyone in your life is conspiring against you.
Right.
So
right. But, you know, okay, so then let's go back to the beginning. For Project Monarch, how did it get started? What was the original purpose of this supposed CIA operation?
Well, there's a couple things going on. The Project Monarch, apparently the term seems to have originated with Kathy O'Brien and Mark Phillips. Mark Phillips himself told me that he thinks it was an informal term, that there was never actually a project called that. It came out of the MKUltra mind control experiments. This was just an aspect of it that I guess you could say that Project Monarch type scenarios always involve a nexus of child sex abuse, mind control programming, and Satanism and the intelligence community. So, well, supposedly what it, like all of the mind control experiments of the 60s, it basically came out of research that the Nazis had done, and the Allies and the Russians both became aware of these mind control experiments that the Nazis had been doing, and they decided that they wanted to do it as well, And it became kind of an arms race between the United States and the Soviet Union to see who could master the greatest mind control techniques. Supposedly, there was this technique being used by the Nazis called marionette programming. And this involved taking someone from childhood onward and subjecting them to really traumatic, horrible sexual abuse and torture and the satanic rituals, the purpose of which is to frighten and traumatize them. And then that what that does is it breaks the personality of the child down. And we know now that there's this thing called multiple personality syndrome, or now they call it dissociative identity syndrome. And so basically, if you're subjected to trauma in childhood, then your mind fractures and you have these different personalities. And they found that they could use that and actually program each personality to do things that the other personalities wouldn't recall afterwards. So the sexual aspect it's just being used in this way to break someone down. So the marionette programming used child sex abuse to create a mind-controlled slave. Now, what seems to have happened later on when this technique was mastered by the intelligence community was that they actually used it to create a mind-controlled sex slave. And the purpose of that is twofold. One, you can have a mind-controlled slave who can service members of the government discreetly, give them whatever sort of pleasure they want, and you know that they're never going to go and tell someone because they're under mind control. The other value of having a mind-controlled sex slave to the intelligence community is that you can prostitute them out to powerful people that the CIA wants to control, and then you videotape that encounter or film whatever you've got. And then you can use it against them later. You have that person under your control. And that seems to be what this scenario turned into later on in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, is mainly used to compromise politicians and other powerful people and keep them under the control of the intelligence community. You could use this to turn someone who was a foreign agent into a double agent for your side, or if there was a politician, again, that you wanted to control or get some information from or force them to spy for you, then you could use your mind-controlled sex slave to compromise them sexually, and then you have them under your control. So that's basically what Project Monarch is the utilization of child sex abuse and satanic ritual abuse to break someone down mentally, turn them into a slave, and then also perhaps actually use them as a sex slave and prostitute them.
As an agent, so yes. To speak, yeah, right? Well, just real quickly then, exactly, as best you can tell, what was the start date? You said 60s. So do we have anything more specific in terms of a time?
Not really, because, I mean, we're really dealing with something that's sort of in the realm of urban legend, but it is based on something, you know, we can find documentable instances of these things having occurred, but like I said, there's no real Project Monarch.
There's no paper trail. There's no paper trail that the CIA is going to be producing anyway. All right. Well, when we come back, then I want you to go through some of the very credible people that you spoke with, the ones that you believed were the most credible, and have them talk a little bit more about their experiences. Tracy Twyman coming up next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Could it be that thousands of people have been bought and sold on the underground sex market through the CIA? That's what we're talking about. But we haven't even gotten into the occult and satanic rituals yet. Exactly what happened and to whom, at least according to the testimony gathered by Tracy Twyman. And what about these anti-Christian services at Christian churches, and who's doing that, and more about this ultra secret non-official operation run under MK Ultra, top secret project called Monarch. We'll get back to this coming up next with Tracy Twyman on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. So we're talking with Tracy Twyman, and we were just talking about this ultra-secret project called Monarch. And if the testimony that you heard from the most credible sources is true, do we know which, under whose original auspices of the CIA we should be turning to point the finger of blame? I mean, who do they ever get specific about who it was at the CIA that was their handlers or the names of people, or how much do they know or remember about the CIA aspect of this?
Well, I remember reading Anne McKenna's book, and she said that she had actually personally been trained by Joseph Mengele. and I don't know if that's true or not.
Joseph Mengele, the former Nazi angel of death who was living in South America.
Right. I would say in general, there aren't a lot of CIA names named, actually. Okay. In general, people who claim to have been victims of Project Monarch have the names of more well-known politicians and other entertainers, famous people that they believe were involved in training them and handling them. They don't seem to know the names of a lot of specific CIA people or military people, but like, say, for instance, Bob Hope allegedly was the handler of Bryce Taylor. Robert Byrd was the handler of Kathy O'Brien.
Okay, the comedian Bob Hope.
Yes.
Okay.
Because the story says that, not only were politicians involved, but also the elite have friends in the entertainment industry. Specifically, Kathy O'Brien says that the country music industry is rife with people involved in Project Monarch. And also some of these people say that some of the entertainers are themselves mind-controlled, that not only country music, but in pop music. This is something that actually the mind-controlled community, the conspiracy community says a lot, is that some of our most well-known entertainers have been victims of mind control.
Now, again, I'm not willing to dismiss this and say that this absolutely could not ever have happened in any form, and it sometimes happens. Somebody has been a victim, and then but their ability to recall details and to be able to make, sort of a cogent reconstruction of their experiences becomes challenged by whatever psychosis has taken over in after the experience. So maybe the person looked like Bob Hope to her, and that's why to this person it became Bob Hope. And I'm only saying that not to invalidate what they're claiming is, but that's the interesting thing about part of what you're saying. And to go back to where you began with this, if these people really did experience these horrible things, then they can be forgiven for not being in their right mind all the time, in order to be able to give us expert witness testimony.
Yeah, and I think that's something we know is often the case with victims of sexual abuse, is that when sometimes they repress the memory, and when they recover it, sometimes they are foggy on who actually did the raping or molesting. They might have thought it was their father, and then it turned out to be a teacher or something like that. There are some people, not presidents necessarily, but people that have been accused in cases that sounded a little more credible. I would say that what is called the Franklin cover-up seemed like a really credible case, where the whole story came out during the SNL scandal of the 1980s, and there was this savings and loan called the Franklin Savings and Loan in Nebraska. And when they were investigating the collapse of that savings and loan, it led to this investigation of all these children who claimed that they had been abused by the head of that savings and loan, whose name was Larry King. not the talk show host, but this guy right. had been really in well with the National Republican Party and actually sung the national anthem at the Republican National Convention in both 1984 and 1988. According to the children that accused him, they also accused the publisher of the Omaha Herald and some other well-known and respected members of the community in Nebraska. And these kids came from, they were orphans at Boys Town. And they said that they had been drugged and taken from their orphanage and taken to these parties, private parties, where they were prostituted to wealthy and powerful people. And then they also have the details about the satanic rituals and being mind controlled.
Now, what happened to those allegations?
Well, several things happened. No one was ever prosecuted criminally, but one of the victims, Paul Bonacci, did win a civil suit against Larry King and was awarded some money. But then later he was also he prosecuted for perjury, him and a bunch of the other kids that had testified, and they actually went to jail for that. But, I mean, this really sounds like a case where these kids are being persecuted for telling the truth. I got to say that I find this to be one of the more credible stories. And what I would say in general about the credible stories that I've found is it's these stories that involve children in orphanages. It comes up over and over again. Kids who really don't, when they grow up and they finally tell the story, they don't seem like they're seeking attention. They don't even seem like people who have, you know, read a lot of internet conspiracy theories or anything. They seem like they're talking about the experiences that they had. Paul Bonacci is one of them. And over and over again, the scenario is children at orphanages are used by intelligence organizations and prostituted at these private parties, and then the proceedings are videotaped, and you know, then it's used against all the people that participated in the party. In the case of the Franklin cover-up, that coincided at the same time with something you might recall, where several people were busted in Washington, D.C., politicians and their aides, for basically running a call boy ring. There was underage male prostitutes being utilized by these men at private parties, and in one case they actually took some of these boys for a tour of the White House. So this story came out in the news around the same time that the Franklin cover-up was coming out, and some of the kids that were involved in that say that they were actually flown to Washington on occasion for private parties there.
So it makes you think that there, if nothing else but just sort of by association or anecdotally, that it just it's too much of a coincidence. And if they're saying that this is happening in one part of the town, one part of the country, I guess it's not all that bizarre to think it could be happening in any part of the country. I mean, who would have thought Nebraska, for God's sakes?
Well, and, we're not.
Right? I mean, I don't know why. I mean, I don't know why that seems so less likely in Nebraska than it would say in Washington, but almost like anything seems possible when it comes to Washington. Now, so at any point, do any of these victims have photographs? Do they have any recordings? Do they have any physical evidence of their abuse?
Well, there's a guy named Rusty Nelson who has been prosecuted for child pornography, actually several times. And he claims that he worked for this ring, the same ring that was involved with the Franklin cover-up. The Franklin cover-up dovetails in with the Johnny Goss case, which I'll get into in a minute. But anyway, Rusty Nelson says that he took photographs of these parties and that he has hid some of the photographs in the mountains of Colorado in a private place. So I haven't seen that. But in Europe, there's some cases that, because they have similar stories going on in Europe. I guess it wouldn't be called Project Monarch because it's, you know, other intelligence agencies involved, but they have similar stories there. And And there are photographs involved in those. And there was a case in Portugal where, again, an orphanage, and it went on for years, and kids kept going to the police and reporting it, and the police would squelch the investigation, wouldn't follow up on it. Finally, though, after like 2 decades of this going on, an investigation did go forward, and they actually ended up finding a child from the orphanage that was being held as a sex slave in the apartment of a Portuguese diplomat. And in that case, there were photographs found, and the police then subsequently lost them. But some of the photographs ended up in a child pornography raid in Paris. And so they actually had, photographs of children being abused, and some of the people that were in the photographs were people that were, well-known politicians in Portugal. And then there's another case in Belgium where, again, there's some photographic evidence. So those are some that I can think of off the top of my head.
Again, we're talking with Tracy Twyman, the author of the book Mind Controlled Sex Slaves and the CIA. It's a compilation paperback from her and some other authors who have been looking into this story, the story of Project Monarch, and the belief that there were leading politicians who were involved at various levels, local and national, in these child abuse rings established by the CIA for various purposes. And the CIA, did they get their, as is being reported by some of the victims, were they always from orphanages?
Oh, no. That's just one of the ways of procuring them. Supposedly, also, children were snatched off the street, as in the Johnny Gosch case. And then there's, according to several, like Kathy O'Brien and Bryce Taylor, they say that some of them are actually bred in families that were already involved in intergenerational incest and child abuse, and families that were already involved in satanic cults or other weird occult groups. And the story is that the CIA studied these families, and they found that their children were more susceptible to mind control because of what they'd been subjected to. And so, and also having done it several generations in a row makes you genetically predisposed to mind control. And to multiple personalities. So anyway, yeah, supposedly there are actual families that are involved in this that, you know, they actually willingly allow their children to be used, and that this has been going on for at least 3 or 4 generations.
Right.
So it could be.
You mentioned earlier we were talking about how some of the people who you were put in contact with told their story, but you didn't find it credible because of aspects of the way in which they told the story, or how some element or many elements in the way in the narrative became kind of suspect to you. Have you ever taken this? Did you at any point run this by a psychologist or a psychiatrist and say, what do you see in this material?
No, I didn't do that. I talked to someone from the False Memory Syndrome Foundation, and she is she has some credentials in psychology or psychiatry, I guess. Name's Pamela Freed, but I mean mainly the False Memory Syndrome Foundation exists to exonerate people who have been accused of satanic ritual abuse, and it's all. The board of directors is all people who have been accused of it themselves. So, you know, their motivation is to clear their names. It's not really studying psychology as much.
Right.
I mean, they have this whole theory about false memory syndrome, and that basically they think that that the therapists have been implanting these ideas in people's heads or encouraging delusional ideas that they already had. And they point out interesting fact, which is that a lot of these therapists that do deprogramming of mind control, therapists that believe mind control happens and they believe in satanic ritual abuse, there's not that many of them, and they all tend to be members of really marginal Christian churches that believe in satanic conspiracy theories, you know, so they already believed in this stuff, and they all know each other, and they do they do lectures and stuff on it together. And so I don't know. It is possible that some of these people are being victimized by their therapists. Or at least their therapists just, you know, don't mind going along with it to keep them in the chair, I guess.
Right, right.
But, yeah, I did not actually run specific scenarios past a psychiatrist, no.
And I'm not seeking to invalidate the testimony out of hand. I'm just curious whether there is a pattern to this that an objective psychologist could see and go, well, this is typical of the, you know, this type of whatever. I don't know. It was just a thought off the top of my head. Now, that brings us to the leading politicians involved in the child abuse rings. We were talking about presidents. There were some vice presidents involved, too, then, according to the testimony of people?
Yes, I believe that Kathy O'Brien said that back when George Bush Sr. was just a vice president that he attacked her. In fact, she has this story about being chased through the woods with Dick Cheney and George Bush Sr. chasing her, and they both had guns. They were playing this game that she says is called the most dangerous game, and she was naked, and then she was set free in the woods and told to run for her life, and then they chased her with guns, and when they finally cornered her, then they raped her. So that's one story from Kathy O'Brien about an encounter she had with allegedly had with a vice president at the time.
Why has Kathy O'Brien's testimony gotten so much credibility and so much play? I mean, I too had heard from people representing her or people passing along her story. Why her?
Oh, she's just very prolific. I mean, she's written a couple books on it. She's put out some videos. She done a lot of tours, lecture tours, and, you know, she was out there in front. I would say she was the first person to write a book specifically about this, claiming that she was a victim of mind control, that she was a sex slave, a mind-controlled sex slave. So, you know, she just sort of started it all, and then, and I'm not saying that there's no legitimacy to what she's saying or that the stories didn't exist before her, but I'm saying she sort of crystallized it.
Right.
And then it seems to me that other people's stories that have come out since her book came out seem to follow the same pattern, and I think a lot of these stories have just been influenced by her.
Okay.
So.
Well, we never got to it, and I want to ask it here coming up about the anti-Christian night services at Christian churches. This was supposedly something that was done on more than one occasion, correct?
Yes.
Okay, we'll get to that coming up then. This is part of the story of the mind-controlled CIA sex slaves, Tracy Twyman being the primary researcher on this book. You can link up to it through coasttocoastam.com. This is Ian Ponet. Heading into another hour with the Tracy Twyman. We're still an hour away from taking your calls, and I look forward to getting those on this subject. I have a feeling we might talk with a couple people out there that know something about it. I want to ask Tracy whether she's ever heard from any of the agents that might have been involved in this, either to confirm or to deny details on these stories of Project Monarch. It's her new book, Mind Controlled Sex Slaves and the CIA. It's a startling story, which I pray is all just a matter of, you know, false memory syndrome, that these events didn't really happen. But if they did, then what happened in those churches on the anti-Christian nights? We'll get to that coming up next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Tracy Twyman, talking about CIA mind-controlled sex slaves, and the book that you can link up to through coasttocoastam.com. So Tracy, let's pick up a little bit more on that idea of the agents. Has anybody contacted you who has either been a CIA agent and said this has just not happened, or, you know, this is crazy, or somebody who's been able to confirm any of the testimony from the dozens and dozens of people you've talked to about this?
Actually, no. I have not talked to anyone in the CIA or former members of the CIA that have commented on this one way or the other. The closest I would say is I talked to Michael Aquino, who was a Army intelligence officer and had been accused of being involved in a satanic ritual abuse scandal at the Presidio military base in the San Francisco area. And he happens to not only be a intelligence officer in the Army, and he's involved in psychological warfare studies, mind control, basically. But he also is the head of this breakaway church from the Church of Satan. He's the head of this church called the Temple of Set. And so perhaps because of that, because of his affiliation with the satanic church, he became the target of these accusations, or at least that's what he says, that basically it was just Christians who were offended that someone who's openly a Satanist would be involved in the Army, and especially an officer, and that's why they targeted him for these accusations.
Is he
claims it never
member?
Happened, huh?
Is he an active member of the Army?
Yeah. Well, no, he's retired. That's right.
He's retired now. Retired. Okay. So, but he retired on his own terms. I mean, he wasn't drummed out of the Army or anything.
As far as I know, I mean, I've reviewed his own documentation that he has on his website, and then the claims of other people, and some people claim that he was basically censured by the Army at one point on suspicion of having been involved in this, but I haven't found the documentation for that.
Okay. But this is, again, sort of an interesting parallel story to the claims by people that they have been involved in this abuse ring within the CIA, that he was accused of having satanic rituals at the Presidio, but he was never found guilty of that, and yet at the same time he does say he's a member of an offshoot organization from the Church of Satan.
The head of it. He created that offshoot organization, and he was actually involved in petitioning the Army to recognize Satanism as an actual religion, so that, you know, if you died in combat, you could have a satanic funeral and things like that.
Paid for by the government with the 21-gun salute and the whole bit.
Yeah, and you know, yeah, sure, it's a very interesting coincidence that someone like that would be involved in mind control, psychological warfare studies for the Army. And, you know, I'm sure he did perform satanic rituals on the military base, or at least, you know, in the place where he lived on the military base. The question is whether he actually went to the daycare center there at the Presidio and involved children in the rituals and sexually abused them. Now, of course, he says that never happened. He was never prosecuted personally for it. This other person went to trial, and this other person who's not a Satanist, who was actually a Baptist minister named Gary Hambright, and he went. There was some court proceedings, but he was never never convicted of anything. But some of the children, apparently, who claimed to have been victims, they came up with sexually transmitted diseases, and you know, they were toddlers. So obviously,
right.
Someone abused them.
Bizarre. I mean, it really is just it. It just when you think that there's, I mean, like, oh, come on, it can't possibly be true. Then you get a story like that and you think, all right, well, maybe there is some sort of connection to this. Well, let's go back then to the anti-Christian night services at some of these Christian churches. What's that story about?
Well, there's just a variety of these stories. A lot of my informants that had stories about their abuse in their childhood. Frequently, it took place allegedly at a church, and definitely Kathy O'Brien and Bryce Taylor have these stories of basically black masses taking place at a church. That's what Kathy says happened to her at a Catholic church. That they reversed the Catholic mass, and all the symbolism of the mass is reversed to make it evil instead of good. And then she says that a lamb was sacrificed and the blood was poured all over her. And they called that particular rite the right to remain silent, R-I-T-E, right. And it was basically the purpose of that ritual was to traumatize her and to teach her to stay silent about all of the abuse that she was enduring. Another lady, Arizona Wilder, says that I think this is a Protestant church that she was abused at, and that there was actually this ritual that took place on Christmas night. Like, first there was the Christian service, and then immediately after that was done and all those people left, then they turned off the lights and had a black mass instead. So those are some specific instances I can recall right now. But, I mean, it was really quite prevalent in people's stories that their abuse took place at churches. And a friend of mine has written a book that I actually wrote the introduction to, and it's very hard to find now. I think it's out of print. It's called Lucifer's Lodge, Satanic Ritual Abuse in the Catholic Church by William H. Kennedy. And what he has done is gone through numerous stories of people who say that they were victimized by Catholic priests. And we know a lot of these people are getting paid very nice settlements right now. So a lot of their stories are considered to be credible. Well, he went through all these stories and found elements of them where it looked like not only were people being sexually abused, but there was a satanic element to it as well. And I know that Art Bell has interviewed Malachi Martin when he was alive many times, and he said that there was a satanic conspiracy within the Catholic Church. But interestingly, it does seem to be true that when you go through some of these abuse stories of abuse that took place in the Catholic churches, the stories are remarkably similar and seem to fall into the same pattern as these Project Monarch stories. And I know one in particular priest who's been convicted of sexual abuse was Father Paul Shanley. And one of the interesting facts about him is he seems to have been at least tangentially involved in this thing called the Process Church of the Final Judgment, which is a satanic group. So that's kind of interesting.
And how do you verify that? What is it? He admits to that, or it's been proven in court for that, or?
I don't know exactly. I just remember reading his biography and that was one of the aspects to it. I mean, Paul Shanley is one of the more notorious priests who molested people. He was involved in the founding of NAMBLA, actually. So he's been pretty open about the fact that he likes to have sex with children for a long time.
Right. Okay. Well, I just, you know, I'm trying to be conscious about lawsuits and stuff, so I just want to make sure I can have a better idea, because we are talking about fairly explosive material. You are in your book as well. And so have you gotten a response from the CIA at all since this came out? Has anybody even sent you an email, or have you noticed you're being followed or anything?
No, not at all. I mean, I got kind of freaked out after I interviewed Noreen Gosh, and because it was after interviewing her that I sort of realized, wow, there's really something to this, and you know, I'm getting myself involved in it.
This is the story you had mentioned earlier that you were going to tell us about. This is her son Paul, who was captured off the street.
Her son Johnny Gosh.
Johnny.
In 1982, he was a paper boy, 12 years old, Des Moines, Iowa. He was on his paper route, and he just got snatched off the street, and was never seen again. And it was an extremely famous case at the time. It was on America's Most Wanted. She actually got a law passed in Iowa because when her son disappeared, they made her wait 72 hours before they would pursue an investigation. And so she got the law changed so that, you know, right away when a child is missing, you have to go looking for them. And I found her extremely credible. I do not believe that she's lying. There may be some aspects of what she believes or thinks that aren't correct. She may have been influenced by someone else to believe that, but I don't think she's lying.
Well, and what's her story? What does she believe happened?
Yeah, I'm getting to that. Her son disappeared, and she says that he came back in the 90s as an adult and visited her for one night only. Because he said he was on the run from the people that had captured him. And then he told this whole story, and it's exactly like the Project Monarch story. He says that the people that kidnapped him were prostituting him to powerful people, and that there were satanic rituals and mind control. And, you know, it's exactly the same thing as Project Monarch. And according to her, she says that Paul Bonacci, who was one of the victims in the Franklin cover-up, he told her that he was involved in the kidnapping of her son, that he had been forced to act as a decoy to lure him into the car. So that's how it dovetails in with the Franklin cover-up case. And interestingly, she says that her son, the person that visited her as an adult in the 90s, looks identical to Jeff Gannon, who was the conservative blogger that there was sort of a scandal in 2005 when he got into the White House press room for a few days. And people thought he was like a plant from the Bush administration. And then so there was that scandal in 2005. And around the same time that the scandal came out, Noreen Goss said that this looks like the man who visited me. This looks like the adult Johnny Goss. And I don't know. Huh. If that's, I really don't believe that part because Jeff Gannon says that, you know, it's not him.
Right.
And, you know, there's no reason to not believe him. So. The story Noreen Goss told me about that her son got kidnapped and then came to her later and told her all about the satanic rituals and the mind control, I mean, I found that really chilling. And then her story also involves for years she investigated his disappearance herself because she could not get cooperation from the police department. She couldn't get them to take it seriously. And then she was getting she's getting tips from people that she said were from the FBI and CIA that were telling her all about Project Monarch, which she says she knew nothing about at the time. She wasn't interested in conspiracies. But when her son disappeared, people started telling her that there's this underground child prostitution network across the country, across the world, and the government is involved. I found her to be credible in that's what she believes, and she's seen evidence of it. I was really kind of taken aback after interviewing her, where right. I suddenly realized that there is this real thing, that really there are people who like to have sex with children, and there's a network of them throughout the world, and they do traffic in children. They trade children around so that they can have sex with them, and a lot of times they kill them at the end of it. And how in the statistics of how many missing children there are, I think I read that there's like 900,000 of them reported every year. There's also about a million people trafficked across borders every year for sex slavery. And, you know, how can things go on at this level without someone in government looking the other way, at least? You know, I really do think that there's some level of conspiracy here. I don't know if the goal is mind controlling children, or if it's just, you know, there's some corrupt officials that are on the take, or maybe they themselves are involved in abusing children. You can speculate about why, but I believe that there's definitely a cover up of the child prostitution network in the United States, and there have been cases where it seems that members of the intelligence community have taken children from orphanages and prostituted them at these private parties. And, you know, I find all of that to be somewhat believable from the evidence that I've seen. And the part that seems so weird is that there would be satanic rituals and mind control involved. I mean, you can sort of follow the logic and believe that, you know, there's this child prostitution ring and there's some corrupt government officials letting it happen. Well, but why are there the satanic rituals? Why the mind control? Why do these aspects keep coming up in the stories of children who say they've been abused? It's just really hard to dismiss.
Have you? I want to get back to that obviously in just a second, but I want to do it via this. Have you seen the recent stories about King Solomon's mines? They found it recently in Israel.
Yes, I saw the headlines. I sort of, glanced at why.
Copper mines, right? They found not gold mines, but they found copper mines, and I think it's an intriguing idea. It reminded me that, it's just the title was Solomon's Treasure. Wasn't that the name of your book about money and magic and the occult symbols on money? But it just reminded me that there's evidence that is uncovered from time to time that back up, say, Bible stories or other claims in history. What would be the thing which you would, as a researcher on this story of mind-controlled sex slaves and the CIA, what piece of evidence is the holy grail to this investigation?
I guess it would be if someone from the CIA came out, and not just an agent, but, someone who had been in the hierarchy. If we could get someone who had been a former director to talk about this, we've had some of the MK Ultra mind control experiments. The documentation has been declassified. In some cases, they've apologized for doing experiments on unwilling victims. And if somehow it were to all come out like that, then yeah, that would be the holy grail. I don't know what would cause that to happen. And I think the MK Ultra documents that we have seen are the ones that they thought were okay to release. I think that for the most part, anything that involves the torture of children or the rape of children, there's probably not going to be documentation of it, government documentation of it. I don't think so.
Somebody just sent me the link to the Johnny Gosch website. And I just in the last few seconds, just started looking at that. I look forward to taking a closer look to that here in the break, but it seems a lot like what you were just talking about, that this is the website being operated by Noreen, his mother, is that right? Tracking photos, videos, any information about the reappearance of the adult version of Johnny Gosch, including a photograph from February of the boy having been kidnapped. And it's right there on the website, being held captive. I don't know. It's so overwhelming to think this is true, and yet there just seems to be so much anecdotal evidence that there is, and we'll get to more of it coming up next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. I kind of pride myself on staying up to date on news stories and being a, more than averagely informed individual, but this is a lot of new information for me. I don't know how it is for you if you are feeling as overwhelmed as I am, not just by the detail of the work of Tracy Twyman on the story of mind-controlled CIA sex slaves, but also on the subject matter and the real tragedy of the information as well. You kind of wish everybody was crazy. You kind of hope that this is all just a kind of a mass hysteria, and everybody feeding off each other and tripping off each other's psychoses in some way or another to give similar accounts. Because if it's real, it's too ghastly to contemplate. If we know what we think we know, then the big problem is we don't know what we don't know either. And we only know stories that have been reported, right? We only know that the parents that report their children missing, or the stories of the parents who have actively sought to try to get their children back. We don't have any idea what the real implications are of this. We can't possibly have the perspective yet on what the scope of this might actually be, if it's real. But we'll continue on that assumption that it is, and we'll explore one last aspect of this case before we get to your phone calls coming up. And I found something on the Johnny Gosch website. I just have to ask Tracy Twyman about. We were talking about the disappearance of a Des Moines paper boy back in the early 80s. And there's just something here that just kind of, again, coincided with what she was talking about just a minute ago on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. So we were talking about these CIA mind-controlled sex slaves. That's the subject of this new book. And so I went looking at the Johnny Gosch website, which somebody sent me a link for. And then that took me to a Wikipedia entry on Noreen Gosch.
Yeah.
And then I come across this part, and I just thought, okay, this is just such a weird thing to me. I don't know that I quite understand it, so maybe you can sort it out for me. That the guy who represented this guy, Bonacci, now, again, we're talking about Paul Bonacci, a sex offender imprisoned in Nebraska, who sued to get money for his victimization as part of what they call the Franklin cover-up, right? That he had been abused by the head of the Franklin Credit Union. Am I getting this right?
Yes.
Okay. So the lawyer who represented this guy, Paul Bonacci, wrote a book called The Franklin Cover-Up, which was prefaced by retired CIA officer William Colby, the former head of the CIA.
Yes.
This is weird.
No, I personally did not talk to anyone in the CIA who confirmed that this stuff was happening. John DeCamp says that he did, because he was friends with William Colby, and he said that they had private conversations where they talked about this. And basically what Colby told him was, yes, the CIA was pursuing mind control and during the Cold War especially, and the point of view of the CIA was any means necessary in order to defeat the Soviet Union. So if that means that we've got to, you know, hurt people in order to be better at mind control than the Soviet Union is, then that's what we need to do. And he basically said, you know, that he personally regretted it. He, William Colby, did, that he thought, you know, that they had gone too far. But he also said that the whole time the CIA and the American military was afraid of being behind the technology of the Soviet Union. And he says, in reality, we never were. We were always at the forefront. We were always had more mind control techniques at our disposal than they ever did. So, but yeah, that's another thing. I think John DeCamp is a very credible person. Yeah, former Nebraska state senator and lawyer who investigated the Franklin cover-up scandal at the time, and he found it to be credible. He found the children who claimed to have been abused to be credible.
And abused in a ritual prostitution ring. I mean, all of the same types of things we're talking about for the CIA, and William Colby is the one that writes the preface for the book, which just adds an enormous amount of credibility to the claim.
Yeah, I would agree that, yeah, that's why the Franklin cover-up is just so... It's just so hard to poo-poo it because, yeah, John DeCamp's very credible, and then he's got William Colby backing him up. Of course, William Colby's dead now, and so, we can't interview him and get his real perspective on it, but, you know, you have what he wrote in the book.
Well, isn't that interesting, though, too, that William Colby dies under these mysterious circumstances, later ruled to be, I believe, a natural cause of death, but he was... his body was missing for a long time, right? I mean, for a month or more. They say that he died from drowning in hypothermia,
right,
after collapsing from a heart attack and falling out of his canoe.
Right.
Now, and it's not out of the realm of possibility. He was 76 years old or whatever. But again, just knowing what we know now about the CIA and how they work, to fake a heart attack, that's nothing. To drown a guy, that's nothing.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm fascinated by the story. I mean, as soon as I start thinking there's no way this could possibly be true, I keep coming back to, you know, could it be that he was, because he was talking, because he was, you know, he had been, here I find this piece, that John DeCamp, who represented the guy who made the claims against the Franklin cover-up ring, who stated in his book, The Franklin Cover-Up, that Colby was murdered because he knew too much about corruption in U.S. politics. So he just comes out and names it.
Yeah. I mean, he could have known a lot of things besides just stuff about Project Monarch. Who knows what the real reason was, if he was killed, what the real reason was. But I imagine, yeah, if you're the CIA director, you have all sorts of information that no one would ever want you to talk about.
Okay, so we're going to take some calls here coming up, and I don't know what will happen when we're talking with Tracy Twyman. Maybe some people that can corroborate this, other people who may have had similar circumstances, and I just prepare you for that because that tends to happen whenever we get on a subject like this. It may not be the case, but it just might be on the way. So we've talked a little bit about some of the principal cases. And I'm grateful for your candor on all of this. Is there anybody else whose testimony broke through your, I think a naturally sort of suspicious nature that maybe some of these things are overblown? Is there anybody else who, as they laid out the scenario, you felt like they had enough to be included on the side that said to be believed?
Of people that I interviewed personally, no, I wouldn't recommend any of the people I interviewed personally. I wouldn't say that I absolutely believe that they're telling the truth. I would just say that I've read about a number of cases in my research where it definitely seems to fit the scenario of Project Monarch. And I've been really amazed, actually, how frequently something comes out in the news now that I know what to look for and I'm paying attention. That
like what?
I see a story and I say, hey, that sounds like Project Monarch. And you were talking before about the satanic rituals going on in Christian churches. One of the cases I wrote about happened in 2005, and the trials are still happening this year. I don't know if you guys remember, but back in 2005, this case broke in Ponchatoula, hope I'm pronouncing that right, Louisiana. It's called the Hosanna Church. It was just like one of these one-branch churches. And it had been around for a few decades. The pastor who was involved in this case that I'm talking about was the son of the guy who had founded the church. So it had been a Christian church for a while. Well, all of a sudden, one woman says, that her child was abused at the church. She reports this to the police, that there was some sexual abuse at the church. And they're investigating the case. And while they're investigating, all of a sudden, the pastor of the church walks into the sheriff's office and sits down and starts confessing that he has been sexually abusing his two sons from the time they were 4 years old until they were 13. He says that he involved them in satanic rituals and poured cat blood on them, and that also they were having sex with a dog. And he tells all of this stuff to the sheriff in a manner as though he's not confessing a crime, but just sort of trying to add information to his investigation, just trying to be helpful. And the police, of course, just thought, this is really weird. You know, why would someone just confess this like this? And so they started investigating. And they found some more people at the church who were willing to confess that they'd been involved in these satanic rituals and abusing children. And then some of the children came and said that, yes, I've been abused in this manner. So they start prosecuting these people at trial. And all of a sudden, all the people that had confessed recanted their confessions. And they say they were mind-controlled into making these confessions by some other person at the church who was considered herself to be a prophetess. And there's really not a lot of detail available in the newspapers about who this person was, what the manner in which she supposedly mind-controlled them was. But that's what now everyone is saying in court 3 years later. Even the children that say originally said they were abused are now claiming they were mind-controlled into making those statements. Now, who... You know, in what manner were they mind controlled, and what was the goal is never said in the newspaper articles. The pastor of the church has now been convicted and sentenced to four consecutive life sentences for molesting his children. Now, when they investigated, also one of the things they found supposedly the police say that they found ceremonial robes and pentagrams drawn on the floor of the church. So here again, we have a case of satanic rituals going on inside a Christian church, children being molested during them, and supposedly a mind control aspect. And no one has, as far as I can tell, has gotten to the bottom of this story. And it's kind of weird too. Like none of the newspaper articles really delve into what's going on here. They just sort of report the facts. But it's, to me, it sounds like this. I don't know if there's a government influence involvement here, but it sounds to me like this is another case that would fit into the Project Monarch scenario.
You know, I think maybe part of the problem for this and the skepticism, and I think this is fascinating, and the fact that so many people are willing to admit it is, I mean, and to talk openly about the satanic infiltration of some fundamentalist Christian churches. But I think the reason why it becomes harder to just sort of accept this, other than to have that initial moment of just total shock, is because of the McMartin preschool case in Manhattan Beach, California, right? The story where it seemed like the same type of thing, satanic abuse, secret passageways, and all of it in the end, as far as I know, all proven to be totally untrue.
Well, yeah, I mean, the case dragged on for 7 years. I think it started in 1983, and it was like 1989 or 90 by the time it finally, you know, the people were finally acquitted. I think several of them stayed in jail that whole time because they were denied bail. And as the years went by, most of the child witnesses dropped off and decided not to testify. A lot of them totally reversed their stories.
Right.
But yeah, at the time, it was like there was like over 100 children at least.
I think it was 400 kids or something. I mean, it was this incredible number.
And then, yeah, they're saying that they're taken to tunnels underneath the school. And there were satanic rituals, and animals were sacrificed, including one kid said a giraffe was sacrificed. I don't know how you get a giraffe underneath the
right.
school.
Right.
And then one of them said that he flew in a helicopter with Steve Garvey, I believe he's a baseball player. Or
right,
was.
Right. And, LA Dodgers. Right.
Chuck Norris was involved. I mean,
Padres, yeah.
So,
yeah. Yeah, Chuck Norris, right. Weird. Well, so that's what I'm saying. So, I mean, I think of that story, and then you read this one. And I actually found a link to the story from Newsweek, and it gives the story just as you describe it, matter-of-factly and without remorse. Louis LaMonica said that he and other church members had molested children and taught them to have sex with each other. He said the detectives that he drank cat blood, poured it on the bodies of his young victims. And that is exactly like the story that Kathy O'Brien had been telling, but she'd been telling it long before this guy told it, correct?
Right. Yeah. And what is his motivation for confessing this? What is his motivation for doing it? I mean, if it were true, you know, I guess he's a Satanist, but, and that's supposed to explain it, but, still, yeah. What would put such an idea in a person's head to do that to the children at their church? And the only thing I can come up with about why these stories keep taking place in Christian churches is that maybe that's the last place where someone would suspect it of happening.
Sure.
And also I think that abuse does take place in churches and cults and inside any sort of closed environment. That's why it seems to happen so much, so often in orphanages too. So I think that, you know, a church, and especially if it's like a really small church, like Louis LaMonica's church was, there's only one branch of it and maybe 20 people attending, you know, in an environment like that, it's really easy to, you know, keep
right.
people quiet. And, I don't it's an environment that seems to foster this.
Well, and you may not have a cult, but you have a cult of personality, and people will be perfectly willing to believe you and believe in you as you tell them what they need to do in order to, you know, reach salvation. Well, Tracy, this is everything that I thought the show was going to be, including difficult sometimes to be with these stories. But I will tell you, the phones are ringing already. People want to talk about whatever it was that they experienced, or questions or comments that they have, and we'll get to that coming up after the top of the hour. And so thank you, everybody, for hanging on already. Some people have been already on hold for like 10 minutes that wanted to talk about this. But as you look at other news stories from around the world, do you see evidence of this? You had mentioned before that there was something that there'd been some of this in Europe, and I wanted to go back to that thread real quick. That you've seen some of this. Have we seen any in Asia? Have we seen anything that corresponds to this type of organized mind control abuse
in Asia?
Well, anywhere else around the world.
Okay, yeah. Well, I'd definitely like to talk about what was going on in Belgium.
Okay.
There was this case, late 90s is when the story broke, and then the trial went on for a few years in the 2000s. But the guy's name was Marc Dutroux, and when he was arrested, they found like that he had killed at least 6 girls in his basement. He had kidnapped and raped and tortured several others. Not just a basement. We're talking about a subterranean dungeon that he personally had right. built underneath his house. And when he got arrested, he started telling people that he was a part of this larger network of a child prostitution ring, basically, and that he was kidnapping girls and selling them to other people for thousands of dollars, and he didn't know what happened to them after that. Obviously, he killed girls himself, so we can assume that several of the other victims were killed. At any rate, the whole case went on for years. He was killing and right. raping girls, and he never got caught because there was this police corruption basically preventing him from getting caught. And when he finally did get caught, he said, "You'll never find the other people that are involved because they're too high up. They're too powerful."
Let's let that hang there, because that's that brings us right back to the title, doesn't it? Mind-Controlled Sex Slaves and the CIA. Tracy Twyman, you'll get a chance to talk with her coming up next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Heading into our last hour on Coast to Coast AM with Tracy Twyman, talking about this very difficult book, Mind Control, Sex Slaves, and the CIA. She is one of the writers of the book. Others contributed to it as well. And I think you all are about to contribute to the conversation in a big way, as all the phones are locked up except for the international line, I think, is the only one that's open. And I'm sure that'll get filled, too, in just a second. On Coast to Coast AM, this is Ian Punnett. All right, let's go right away to the person who's been hanging on the longest. Don is in Hilton Head on East of the Rockies line for Tracy Twyman, Mind-Controlled Sex Slaves and the CIA. Don?
Yes, thanks, Ian. I have two quick questions, and I'll take my answers off the air. First, how is this information gathered? And two, how do we solidify the information so we can do something about it? Thank you, and I'll take it off there.
Okay. Well, I gathered my information two ways. I interviewed some people. Some had claimed to have been victimized themselves. Others were investigators in the subject of mind control and the CIA. In addition to that, I just started collecting stories from the news and from history, and just, you know,
putting
it all together. So that's how I did my research. And like I said, then I got a lot of also anecdotal information from people that emailed me.
Right.
I think I've said that there's very little actual documentation of Project Monarch. There's documentation of MK Ultra. But specifically Project Monarch, there is not. So that's really what makes it so difficult to research and to do anything about it. I mean, I don't know. You would have to find some sort of documentation proving CIA involvement first before you could, you know, prosecute anyone in the government for doing anything. I think the thing that we can do about the problem of child prostitution, child pornography, kidnapping, and abuse is just be more aware of it. The news, they like to focus on maybe one missing child at a time and obsess on it. And then the whole time that, you know, Nancy Grace is talking about one particular child that's missing for a whole month or 2 months. Well, during those 2 months, you know, thousands of other children have gone missing. So it just seems to me like the news, the media likes to, you know, cherry pick certain stories that they think are interesting and they ignore the rest. They never talk about the real statistics of missing children, the fact that most children that go missing, if they're missing for more than 3 days, they're never seen again or they're found dead. I think that we need to be more aware of that and, you know, just put all the information together more and sort of see the big picture.
I'm not inclined to define or defend Nancy Grace very much, whom I don't care for, but in her defense, I actually do think she does present a lot of those facts. And I think it's always difficult to say the media, capital T, capital M, because we are the media. The media is everywhere. You're the media. You're an author of a book. The people with websites are the media. I mean, there's lots of information that's out there. I think that sometimes it's just so much information, it's overwhelming. And
right.
I think that maybe the upside of what Nancy Grace does is on a case-by-case basis, she helps to keep it from getting so overwhelming that you just think, oh, my God, there's something we can do, but I can't take. And instead, focus on one little case at a time,
mm-hmm.
in a way, may keep it more real than if you just dealt in the true depth and breadth of the tragedy every time you went on the air. But
well, here's another thing that the media tends to do is when people come forth and say that they've been abused, and there's an aspect of the story that involves Satanism or the occult, they automatically say, okay, I'm not reporting that. And that aspect of the story does not make it on the air. And that's why so many people are unaware of that connection. And when they do hear about it, they think it sounds like nonsense. But
well, Geraldo Rivera for that. I mean, there was part of that whole scare that he did for a while, and then it turned out that none of those cases could ever be verified. And
right.
the whole country got all ginned up about that. Believe me, I remember it was in the 80s, and people were nuts about it, and they were seeing it everywhere, and the media was all about it, and I think the media got burned.
Yeah, exactly.
And so they're sort of reluctant to go back down that road again. First-time caller line, Aaron is in Iowa on Coast to Coast AM for Tracy Twyman.
Hi, Ian. Thanks for taking my call. I was wondering what your guests had to say about the Hunter Thompson connection to this case.
I don't know what that is. What is that?
Well, there's two theories that I've heard. One is that Hunter was working on a book about Project Monarch, and a friend of his actually told Alex Jones that shortly before he committed suicide, he said, they're probably going to kill me for this, and I know how they work. They'll make it look like a suicide. The other theory, which is a lot darker, relates to some allegations way back in the 80s of Hunter Thompson actually being involved in pedophile and slavery rings, and Paul Bonacci actually said that he was witness to Hunter Thompson being allowed to film to videotape a snuff film involving children. And I was wondering.
I can comment on that.
Yeah, I hope you do, because, and Aaron, no offense, but I mean that's so that's, you know, for the estate or for the family of somebody, if they didn't, that's outrageous, but.
Yeah, I would happen to agree. The evidence connecting Hunter S. Thompson is non-existent. What the story he's referring to is, yes, Paul Bonacci says that he was at Bohemian Grove and he witnessed the production of a snuff film where a boy was raped and killed at the end of it. And he says that the person that was filming it was a person named Hunter Thompson. To my knowledge, he's not said, oh, the person that I was with looked exactly like Hunter S. Thompson. I mean, there could be another person named Hunter Thompson, or the whole story could be wrong, you know?
Or somebody who just went by Hunter Thompson, like he could just say that was the name he decided to go with, like Rock Hudson or something.
Right. And then the whole thing about him being committing suicide and that being involved in Project Monarch, that's theory comes, it stems from the Jeff Gannon theory that Jeff Gannon is Johnny Gosch, that Jeff Gannon was, you know, a victim of Project Monarch who grew up and sort of became a shill for the government. And supposedly Hunter S. Thompson killed himself. Well, he did kill himself shortly after that that story came to light. The Jeff Gannon scandal where he was in the White House press room, that scandal came to light right before Hunter S. Thompson killed himself. And so then some conspiracy theorists claimed that he killed himself because he knew that the whole Project Monarch story was about to come out because Jeff, wow. Jeff Gannon was in the news all of a sudden. Again, yeah, this is all is very there's just not a lot of evidence to it at all. So I don't see any reason to, defame this person based on that evidence.
Larry is in San Francisco on Coast to Coast AM for Tracy Twyman. Larry?
Good morning. Yeah, before I get to my points, I got to say, every time I hear you mention Monarch, I think of the Ventures Brothers cartoon show, that character, the Monarch. But, you know, I've been studying this topic for over 20 years, and I got to say, I mean, it just doesn't seem to be anything to it. Certainly, this is not the first book that makes claims about CIA sex slaves. I could mention a couple right off the top of my head. The control of Candy Jones by
that's fine.
By
what's your point,
Neville.
Larry,
also a book. Yeah.
Larry, I'm good with this, but what's your point? Go ahead. You've got the author right here, so you have a question or a comment for the author.
You said there weren't any other books about the subject, and I was pointing out there are a few. This bringing up Michael Aquino in the way you are, I think it's really unfair because Michael Aquino is a member of a church called the Church of Set, which absolutely has nothing to do with child abuse. If you can read the doctrines of the Church of Satan or the Church of Set, they're absolutely against harming innocents in any way.
Right. All right,
they
take a breath here.
They simply don't do it. It's not part of their belief system.
Larry, take a breath. Take a breath so Tracy can get in here. Go ahead, Tracy.
Yeah, I never accused Michael Aquino or the Temple of Set of anything. I'm merely relating allegations that have been made, and the allegations against Michael Aquino and the Presidio scandal are part of the whole story of Project Monarch. That's why I bring it up. I personally have no real reason to believe that he was involved in this. I just brought it up because it's part of the story.
You're acting as if it's somehow significant. He's a member of the Church of Satan, and he was accused of these child abuse things. And the Church of Satan does not in any way approve or condone child abuse in any way. You can read in the Satanic Bible, they don't believe you get power from hurting children or torturing animals. They don't believe it's they just don't do it. But what I'm getting at here is these people you're talking to, they may have had some kind of experience, but how do you know they've had the real experience that you're talking about? You know, you
wait, Larry,
let me
this
just
is where you,
this one point.
No, Larry, that's where you stop and you let somebody respond, because actually we've already talked about that and you've missed it. Go ahead,
Tracy.
Yeah.
Yes, I mean, I think we spent the last 2 hours going over how, you know, a lot of these people's stories are not credible, or it's very difficult to tell where the truth is and where they may have been confused about something. I never said that I know for a fact that any of these people's stories are true. I am just compiling a bunch of stories, evidence, anecdotes, and putting it all together and putting it out there for people to make up their own mind. And obviously, you've made up your mind. Again, I'm not trying to attack anyone here, okay?
No, I thought your point about the reports was fair, and I thought Larry missed it, but we spent a lot of time talking about how can we believe and what's the criteria for belief for these stories.
Right.
And since he missed some of the story earlier, we already spent about 3 minutes with Larry, so I'm going to move on, but I hope he felt like he had the lion's share of what he wanted to say. Mark is in Oregon on Coast to Coast AM for Tracy Twyman. Mark?
Yeah, good evening, Ian and Tracy. I want to give you both. I know this is your bailiwick in particular, Tracy, but seems to be a problem connecting the CIA to this. And I don't think that's the all-important issue here. It's really the evidence that it's going on and the harm and the death that it's actually causing. And the evidence for that is abundant. Tracy, have you heard of Alex Jones by chance?
Of course.
Have you been to his website?
Yeah, I go there frequently, actually.
Mark, okay. What's your point?
Well, Alex is over recent years, he's well documented that the Child Protective Services of the different states of the United States, as far as this country goes, they're actually a channel through which children are abducted from their parents on unfounded charges by the Child Protective Service Agency. And then they are used for the things that Tracy has been describing that happens to children, such as the satanic rituals, snuff films, as well as child slave labor in Malaysia. Mm-hmm. And it's all well documented, and there are American newspaper accounts of Child Protective Service abuse and complicity in these crimes in this right. country. In particular, I can remember at this point.
Let's give Tracy a chance to respond
sure.
in there, too. Oh, go ahead, Tracy.
Well, I think that dovetails into what I was saying earlier, which is just it seems like that a lot of these cases are happening in orphanages. The children are being taken from orphanages or also foster care in some instances. And I'm not familiar with the particular writings of Alex Jones on this subject where the theory is that the Child Protective Service is deliberately taking children away from homes where they're happy and safe and then taking them to use them for sex slavery. But I would just say that, like, any time a child is taken from a normal family home and then put into an orphanage or foster care, they're just definitely way more vulnerable there to this type of abuse, be it, government orchestrated or not. I think kids in foster care and orphanages just get abused way more than the rest of the population. So that part, I believe, I'm not familiar with the idea that Child Protective Services is deliberately taking children to use them for Project Monarch. But, again, I haven't read the Alex Jones articles you're talking about.
Robert, east of the Rockies on Coast to Coast AM for Tracy Twyman. Robert?
Thanks thanks for taking my call, and I have a comment and a couple of quick questions. Ian, you were saying that it just seems hard to believe that anybody that went through this could be sane or anything. And personally, I was raised in the 60s, and myself, my brother and sister went through this same kind of stuff, but it wasn't CIA-related or anything like that. But there was satanic, there was drugs, there was parties where as kids were used sexually, and it was horrible. And so then, like, two questions for Tracy is, it seems like there was a lot of cult activity back in the 60s, and could this information either have filtrated out from the government or from the cult into the government? And then one more question is if she knows any resources to help people that have been victims of this type of abuse to possibly bring people to justice. And I'll listen up there.
Well, hold on. I don't have an answer for your second question. The first one confuses me a little bit. So can you sort of rephrase it?
I'll rephrase for him because I think he hung up. But the notion is that he grew up in a similar environment in the 60s, and he thought that there might have been a lot of this type of cultic ritual abuse, drugs, the abuse of children in 60s communal environments.
Right.
And he just wondered whether you had a thought on that, I guess.
I mean, I think that definitely happened a lot in the 60s. You know, there were a lot of communes and different, like, New Age cults or just different occult groups that were operating in the 60s a lot more openly, I guess, back then than they are now or they were before. And I think that the way the Project Monarch stories go, that the CIA or the government did target existing cult groups that were already abusing children and decided to utilize them and sort of either monitor what they were already doing or introduce their own mind control techniques into the cult and you know, watch what happened. I think, that sort of stuff did happen in the 60s.
Bert is in California on Coast to Coast AM for Tracy Twyman. Bert?
Yes, hi, Ian. I wanted to confirm that your guest is accurate in the things that she has said. And I also wanted to say that, regular civilians, if they bring a concern to their local congressman or senator that might not be popular, they can become a disease, is what the term that they use. Where the family is driven to suicide and their kids are kidnapped by Secret Service agents. I wanted to say that these sex slaves can be normal people in society. They can be housewives. They are essentially targeted by way of electromagnetic weapons or satellite weapons, and they are forced into doing things against their will. You might want to hear
Bert, I'm coming up on a break here, so we're getting a little. I'll just have to say thank you for that, and I'm sorry if that happened to you, that you can confirm what Tracy Twyman has been talking about. And I imagine we have a few more testimonies like that coming up next half hour on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Wildcard line, Vicki is in Texas for Tracy Twyman on Coast to Coast AM.
Hi. I want to say thanks to both of you for taking on this subject, first of all. And I'm taking at least a small risk to even speak up about this, so I hope that you'll let me make my point, and then I'll just listen to your comments off the air. Is that okay?
Yes.
As long as we're not talking too long, sure. Yep.
Okay. Okay, because of my own experiences, I would not ever say that stories like Kathy O'Brien's are lies or exaggerations, but I do think that it should, first of all, be pointed out just exactly who Mark Phillips, her handler, actually was and is, and that's a small aside. More importantly,
I don't know what that means. I don't know what that means. I don't know. I hate using last names unless I know who the person is or whether they're... Tracy, do you know who she's talking about?
Mark Phillips is her husband.
Oh, that's her husband.
Which a lot
okay.
of people think that that maybe he actually is part of the whole conspiracy, too. So.
Okay.
More importantly, I know that there are countless other stories out there that still would be considered horrendous, but that get overshadowed by stories like Kathy's that involve high-level politicians and entertainers. But stories like Kathy's tend to serve kind of as disinfo, even if they're true, because they automatically attach a strong snicker factor to the whole topic of MKUltra and other mind control programs. Sex slavery is only one of the many aspects of the MKUltra mind control programs. And quite frankly, there's evidence that even the UFO phenomenon, although completely genuine, has been hijacked in order to cover up a whole lot of MKUltra mind control sins.
All right, let's put that aside for the moment, Vicki. Tell me what you know about this personally. Why do you speak with authority on the
I am not
control?
Prepared to do that. I'm sorry, Ian. Let me finish what I was going to say, and then I'll try to just a little bit answer what you asked me. On the UFO issue, even if some official disclosure were to occur on the UFO topic, there's plenty of evidence out there that, first of all, we'll never get, even as John Podesta said, the true nature of the phenomenon, and that whatever does get revealed in any official disclosure will basically serve an agenda for someone.
Okay. Well, let's get back to that other question because we're kind of running out of time, Vicki. I got so many other people that want to get on the air. So you're saying you would speak to why you can't say why you have any authority on the subject?
I will briefly. I have family involvement that falls under a heading of let me make this statement. Linda Moulton Howe brought up something the other night that directly addresses in a roundabout way, my own personal involvement. She said something that I've never heard anybody else say on one of these shows. She said on Coast the other night that the Air Force and the Atomic Energy Commission held and hold a whole lot of the truth about the UFO and some of the MKUltra issues. The Air Force and the AEC are the family connections that I have that brought about my involvement in some of these issues, and that's as far as I'm prepared to go.
All right, that's fine. I understand that. I appreciate that. Don't want to push you any further than you want to go. Let's go to Stephanie in Miami for Tracy Twyman on Coast to Coast.
Hey, good morning, Ian and Tracy. How are you?
Hi.
Fine. Yeah, nice stuff to hear this program. It's very interesting. I have a comment about the Church of Satan.
Yes.
And that is from reading a book by Pastor Barb Larson. I know that they have amendment rights for animal abuse. They're protected, so that stuff cannot be put into court.
I'm sorry. You say that again?
The Church of Satan is protected under, I don't know what amendment it is to the Constitution, but they cannot be brought before a courtroom for animal sacrifice.
I'm pretty sure they can. You're talking about First Amendment.
I don't know what amendment is. It's the same for Santeria.
Well,
they're recognized religions now.
Yeah, I mean, there's the amendment that guarantees the free exercise of religion, and basically, you know, you can do whatever your religious ritual is as long as it doesn't violate any other existing laws. Now, of course, there's laws about animal cruelty.
Right.
But again, you know, what is cruel? I mean, we kill animals in farms every day.
Sure.
I think that's why they get away with it because, yeah, I mean, it's okay to kill animals. It's just not okay to kill someone's pet, and it's not okay to torture an animal.
Right, or a child, for that matter. And
right.
So just because it happens under the auspices of somebody's claim to a religion, it doesn't give them an umbrella protection. I think that gets proven over and over again, even in the case of the woman that claimed that she was not a prostitute. This was a ritual sex cult that she was in. And the people left the money as, you know, as a tribute to the priestess involved. The court didn't buy that.
So, now, she said something. She said the Church of Satan is protected for their animal sacrifices. I just want to say that I don't know of any documented cases of the Church of Satan committing animal sacrifices. It's not part of their official ritual. So.
Or being prosecuted for it, even. Right. Yeah,
right.
Let me get... Catalina is in, or is it Catalina in Oregon? Oh, I think I didn't hit it hard enough. There you go. Try again. Go ahead, Catalina.
Yeah, I know a woman who helped assemble Kathy O'Brien's book, Transformation of America, subtitled One Woman's Life as a CIA Mind Control Slave.
Mm-hmm.
And Kathy and her daughter were both involved in the mind control and sexual abuse, of course. But Kathy was called a presidential model, and she said she was raped by every branch of the military.
Right.
My question for you is a continual theme in her book, which reportedly every member of Congress had received, was you can run, but you can't hide. She warned about an upcoming satellite and other surveillance of citizens. And I was wondering if that's a concern of yours. And second, have you read the Franklin scandal book by Nick Bryant, who investigated the nationwide pedophile ring? The book came out about a year and a half ago,
yeah.
The Hands of Children.
You may have missed it. We were talking about that a little bit earlier.
No. She's talking about a newer book about the Franklin cover-up. The one I'm talking about is the original one. It's a bit older. I haven't read the new one, no.
Okay. And so interesting about knowing her, the woman that helped put that together, just goes to show you there's 6 degrees of separation on even a story like this.
Right.
Leo is in Washington for Tracy Twyman on Coast to Coast AM. Leo?
Hi. I'd like to know why we can't just I think I answered my own question just listening, but why can't we plug them into some sodium pentothal and find out who these higher-ups are?
Who? Plug who into sodium pentothal?
The people that they've been caught doing these things. Like you mentioned one just a while ago who said that you'll never find the higher-ups.
Oh, yeah, that in Belgium. I mean, I don't know how to comment on your question. Yeah.
And have you ever heard of the of a pedophile defense fund?
No.
Does NAMBLA have something like that?
Well, it's it was one particular person who's had it done, and he's the famous Arthur.
Hmm. Okay, well, I'll have to leave that there. We get to in Kansas City. Is it Davida?
Davida.
Davida.
Yes.
Thank you.
Well, good evening. I just had a couple of things. Now, one was just wanted to mention that since Monarch was just an offshoot, not even probably an official offshoot of MK Ultra, and they had that layering of memories. And so when these people seem not credible, I imagine what's happening because it's reinforced with trauma.
Mm-hmm.
They even wind up questioning themselves when they're trying to remember things. And that I'm sure that explains it. And the other thing I was going to mention was what the lady was talking about that just called from Texas. I don't know. It just seems like it left my mind.
Oh, it's okay. Vicky, I think you were talking about her when she was... Okay, well, if it comes back to you...
I'm sorry?
I said if it comes back to you, let us know.
Well, I was going to say that with these churches, that's what it was, the churches. The reason that so much of this is happening in churches is because of the division between the government and the church in this country, and that's where the Nazis saw the weakness here. They're the ones that brought MKUltra here, and they were that was what they saw as the best place to conduct a lot of this. And they did it with whole classrooms of children at times, not just individual children in orphanages or homes. So that's why you find a lot of this in the churches. And I know, definitely it was in 87 because I'd been overseas and I came back. There were four churches that were broken up by the FBI because they were found not to be churches.
Right.
And they were all with Nazi connections. Well, I remember at the time becoming aware of a church that some of my family members were involved with. And I won't say which one because they've infiltrated them all. I mean, where you have a church full of people who go every Sunday and have no clue, and the pastor has no clue, things can be going on there on other nights that they have no knowledge about. So,
okay, very interesting.
But the point is about this church connection. When I called the FBI and I said, look, this church is slipping, I was sure because I was there, they slipped a drug into this special service with church members. I said, they're drugging these congregants, and they said, well, there's nothing we can do about it unless a member of that church who is drugged comes and complains. And I'm sure those people had no clue, and if you told them, they wouldn't have believed you.
That's interesting. I appreciate that. And let me get to Brian in Denver on Coast to Coast AM in the time that we have left. Brian?
Hiya. In Kathy O'Brien's book, Transformation of America, she said after she was deprogrammed, she had a photographic memory of these instances when she was under mind control. And she said in one encounter with George Bush Sr., he told her that they were a alien race from a far-off space place that had come and taken over and nobody had realized. And that made me think of David Icke.
Mm-hmm.
And he's done a lot of research into this subject. And he says that there's these interdimensional beings, reptilians, that they don't have a energy source on their interdimensional plane, so they have to set one up. So they do these rituals to create as much fear as possible so they can feed off of it. And also the rituals unlock something in the DNA which allows these people to be possessed. I was just wondering if Chrissy had any comments on that.
I've heard all those stories, of course, and David Icke actually has a his own a girl that he works with has promoted her book, and her name's Arizona Wilder. She claims to have been a mind-controlled sex slave also, but she corroborates his vision of the world as being ruled by
shape-shifting reptiles. She says that all of her abusers were shape-shifting reptiles, and the satanic rituals that she was involved in, they were drinking the blood of the victims, and then they would shape-shift exactly like you were describing. Now, Kathy O'Brien's memory of being told that by George Bush that the elite of this world were space aliens, she thinks that that was they were just trying to implant these ideas in her brain in order to make her feel sort of fearful and, you know, that she had no control over her life, that everything was being controlled by some higher race of beings. So she doesn't believe in the aliens, as far as I can tell.
We have time for just A. Just going by the letter A in Washington, last thought for Tracy Twyman. A?
Yes, thank you. I have MPD. I have a father who's dead now. He's from New York City, and I wondered, he was into pornography and stuff, and I have a bunch of really weird memories and going through flashbacks of you. I haven't heard you said too much about the East Coast, and I wonder, are there people who, they may not be directly in the mafia, but say contracted by or connected with it? Like my father had a studio, and there was people that were abused, and there was satanic stuff. Do you have any kind of proof or heard of or information from other people who've had this kind of situation in their life?
Regarding the mafia connection?
And just, you know, what I want to – it's like a small-town person with a father who goes to New York City, has a studio. But, yeah, we're dealing with this stuff many years later with MPD and the flashbacks, things that are real – it gives you the evidence that it happened because you have the flashbacks of the reality. You heard of other people that they may not be in any direct cult, so to speak, but just a connection with a connection, if you will, you know, as in with the mafia and then a photographer that's a professional.
Yes, I have. I've heard of that. That's pretty much what we've been talking about all night.
Okay, well, and I've been listening. I'm looking for validation because I'm in mass counseling, so I'm struggling here hearing all this.
How many personalities do you have?
Well, there's many because some are fragments because the abuse was like between 1 and 3 where they can get a child so very, very young, you know, like 18 months to 3 years old. And when I was listening with my friend, I was just losing it because I'm like, crap, there's just more evidence to what I already experienced. Then beyond that, it was just, you know, up to 60, but that's with fragments, and you can't really count those with personality. So,
well, you know, I know nothing about that firsthand, and I appreciate your testimony to it, and it must be very difficult, and it sounds like a lot of pain yet to be resolved for you. So best of luck on that, and best wishes in your recovery. And Tracy, boy, what an hour, huh?
Yeah, I knew it would be like this. It's you know, hard to talk about the subject, definitely.
Well, thank you for doing what you did and for being patient with it. And you can link up to her through our webpage at coasttocoastam.com. Keep us up to date. Go ahead, real quickly.
Yeah, we're having a special on our website right now, quintessentialpublications.com. All of the e-books are 50% off, and that includes the e-book of Mind-Controlled Sex Slaves.
Okay.
And for Coast to Coast listeners, there's a special coupon code 1776 to get an extra $2 off.
There you go. Okay, Dave, stay on, and I do too.